We're going to get into Greta Van Fleet. Welcome to the It's One Louder podcast, everyone. My name is PJ Pat, and on this podcast, I share my love and passion for rock and roll, mainly by reading and commenting on articles from guitar magazine, rock magazines, about all your guitar and rock heroes. And today's no different. Now, I know this is a very polarizing band, especially when they came out. I believe it was 3 albums ago. They were pretty much a Led Zepp ripoff, and so some people loved them, some people hated them. I was in a camp, quite truthfully, in those that hated them. I just thought they were just a Led Zepp ripoff, and you know, there were these young kids, very cute, but not really a big fan of just ripping someone off. Now, I know Led Zeppelin ripped off a lot of blues stuff too, so I guess it's because the singer just sounds so much like Robert Plant. It's ridiculous. You know, first time I heard him, I thought it was like, is this like an unreleased Led Zepp song? What's going on here? I was a little confused. Now, you can't really blame them. When they came out with their first album, they were in their late teens, so I get it, you know, but it's just really in this last album where I started jumping on the bandwagon. They were nominated for this year's Grammy Awards for Best Rock Album, and deservedly so. A Starcatcher, really cool. If you haven't listened to it, really awesome stuff. The guitar player, everything is just tight, you know. Their sound, I love their sound now and what they're trying to do. Now, the singer even is trying to even step away from the Robert Plant comparison stuff. Like, he's doing a lot of falsetto, and there's a lot of stuff that he's doing that Robert Plant didn't do, which is great to see that evolution of music and of sound. So let's get into this article. I'm reading from Guitarist Magazine of their February issue. All right, so the article is called Greta Van Fleet. With Red Raw's third album, Starcatcher, rated as the old soul Michigan rocker's best, Jake Kiska reflects on banning stacks from the studio, shaking off those Zeppelin comparisons, and the warfare with his sibling bandmates back in the family garage. Words Henry Yates, portrait photography, page Sarah. Back in 2018, when Robert Plant was asked which of the modern rock's hot tips he rated, the former Led Zepp frontman paid the ultimate backhanded compliment. There's a band in Detroit called Greta Van Fleet, beautiful little singer, and he borrowed it from someone I know very well. They are Led Zeppelin 1. It was a line the rock press would parrot ad infinitum, however reductive it seemed to one of the genre's best young exponents. True, when Michigan twins Josh on vocals and Jake Kiska on guitar, along with kid brother Sam on bass, founded Greta in their family garage a half decade earlier, there was no denying the DNA of classic rock's Galaticos in their riff and shriek sound. But none of the siblings denied the influence, and the comparison certainly didn't hurt. 2017's From the Fires EP won the Grammys for Best Rock Album, while both 2018's Anthem of the Peaceful Army and 2021's The Battle at Garden's Gate were glorious interlopers amid the committee-penned pop of the Billboard Top 10. And as Jake reminds us today with third album Starcatcher, Greta has put distance between themselves and their 70s touch tones with guitar work that roams beyond Page's shadow. You wanted a more garage sound for Starcatcher. What was the appeal? I think it had to do with spontaneity. In the past, we would usually go out somewhere remote, right in the middle of the woods or in the mountains, and we would typically overdo the demos. They started sounding like a record by the time we got out there, and sometimes it's impossible to replicate that initial excitement. With Starcatcher, by design, we would go directly into the studio with basic concepts and just catch the songs as they would fall. So it was birthed by fire. What are your memories of coming up in a family garage with Josh and Sam? Warfare, he laughs. It wasn't all quiet on the Western Front, I can tell you that. We got a lot of sparring out then. I can look more fondly upon it now. It's somewhat romantic. I remember being a kid playing my first guitar in that garage and dreaming about the bigger picture and what that might look like. I think that's what we wanted to do with this record. Go back and capture that essence. It's a very live record for that reason, you know? There's maybe some simplicity within the writing, but in terms of playing guitar live, I think it takes more attitude to pull it off. How has a band's success affected your relationship with your brothers? It's actually brought us closer. I suppose the definition of a brother changes when you leave home, and all of a sudden you realize it's you and your brothers versus the world. It becomes a new relationship. I know there's a mythology of so many groups with siblings that have gone to shit. It can be quite a demanding chemistry. Did you play tough gigs on your way up? I remember we'd play a lot of biker gigs in Michigan, where we'd show up and they'd be running the show with a generator, firing guns off in the air, like a scene out of Easy Rider or something. We were all young and it was quite frightening. But they were the type of guys who would always have your back. Like they'd say, if you ever have an issue, give us a call. One time a biker gang came to a show in Saginaw, then a rival gang showed up, a fight broke out, and we just kept on playing. Is experimenting a good way to stop your playing becoming derivative? I'm always searching to break up rhythm, looking at different genres. Truthfully, if I'm having an issue being stuck in territory that I've been in before, I might go to classical music. I've legitimately used like Sorogsky's Night on Bald Mountain to get me out of sticky situations, or Chopin, or Bach. A romantic way of looking at it is that it's kind of like sculpting. It's like, if you're in a situation where you're thinking a riff has been played, there's tons of ways to shape it into something more interesting. There's so many layers to a riff. If you play Seven Nation Army, you're close, but it's not exactly like Jack White, because there's nuance, there's attitude, there's soul, and then there's heart, the head, and the strings. Everybody's gonna do it differently. That's another fascinating thing. I love to watch people play my guitar pieces and see their interpretation of them. What were your core guitars on this album? It was pretty bare bones, but it was a lot. It was really eclectic. This friend of mine, the owner of Chicago Music Exchange, I told him I was doing a record and asked if he would send some guitars down. And he said, sure, I'll load a truck and send down about 20 extremely interesting vintage instruments. So we got to RCA Studio A, which is this giant studio in Nashville. Elvis and Sinatra records were done there. And I put all of these guitars cases on the ground, all strewn up. I opened all of them. And then we go song by song. What was the best of the bunch? He sent down the fourth 335 that was ever made. It actually destroyed every guitar that producer Dave Cobb had at the studio. We wanted to buy it. I wanted to buy it. And my friend was like, well, it's like a museum piece, so you can't. There were old Tellys. I used a Strat for some of these solos. I would just walk up, grab a different guitar, and it would be completely random, and I would just work on it. It was part of my process on this record. I wasn't just using the beloved, if you will, my number one, the 61 Les Paul. I was like, all right, I'm going to pick a fight with whatever I pick up, and I'll plug it into something, and if it sounds cool, then dot, dot, dot. On this record, it wasn't me forcing these tones or trying to curate what I could hear in my head. It was the other way around. Oh, that's so cool, because you normally hear the other way around where guitars have this sound in their head, and they want to try to replicate that with the right guitar, the perfect amp. If you ever saw Say It Out Loud with The Edge, Jimmy Page, and Jack White, I clearly remember one scene where The Edge, that's what he was doing. That's why he has all these effect pedals and uses a lot of effects, because he was saying in a movie that, you know, he hears a sound in his head and he's trying to replicate that exact sound using whatever effects possible. But looks like this dude did the opposite, which is kind of cool and refreshing. How about your amps and effects on Starcatcher? I did this on their last record too, where I was kind of experimenting, playing a guitar solo back and then playing with the pedal knobs while it's being recorded, so you get all the changing variables. It becomes like a human voice. You can kind of speak through it, and it becomes really psychedelic. That's really cool too. I think they used to do a lot of that back in the day. I believe Jimi Hendrix did a lot of that, where they used to tweak kind of the knobs as it was being recorded, or even after the recording process. I used a lot of the Universal Audio stuff, and we're having fun pushing preamps on the board itself. In terms of amps, there was a blonde Fender Bassman and a Princeton Silverface, both of them vintage, obviously. A Magnatone Twilighter and a Vox AC30, which I typically have in a studio for most records. But this record was particularly interesting because I limited myself to only using combo amps. Your 61 is technically a Les Paul, but with the SG body styling. What drew you to that twin horn format? I remember watching Eric Clapton and Cream when I was a kid. That felt like an intervention. It was seminal for me. Definitely Pete Townsend. I had an old cassette of The Who's Live at Leeds. The first real guitar I owned was an SG Standard with P90s, and that's what Townsend was using at that concert. I remember as a kid just picking up the SG and liking the weight and tactile qualities. I liked it because it was chunky. My dad would take me to guitar shops, and I remember being at a guitar center in Saginaw, Michigan. I was playing Sunshine of Your Love on an SG, and some older guy came around the corner and said, "Damn, that was pretty good. I thought you'd be some older guy like me, and you're like 14. Would you say the SG has shaken off its image as a heavy metal guitar? Man, the lineage of the SG is all over the place. It's kind of popped up in irregular places. I guess with some guitars, they start becoming synonymous with specific genres. Like a Jackson or a Dean is going to be on a metal slash thrash side. But the SG is one of those instruments that is crafted like the Les Paul Strat or the Telecaster at the golden age of guitar. And because the SG has been around for so long, it's kind of ended up everywhere. Yeah, that's definitely true. You've said you studied Jimmy Page's playing to a forensic degree. There's been a handful of guitar players I've done that with. Clapton was one, Hendrix from the American side. It gets into philosophy at some point. It was like living and breathing a type of guitar player at any given time. Page was one of those guys where if I was playing a Zeppelin track, I would walk through exactly what his thought process was when he was putting that song together. I could think exactly like him, or Hendrix, or whoever. Because if you spend enough time with that stuff, it's like a psychological character study, if you will. Have you ever met Page? I haven't. I've been in close proximity. We were staying in the same hotel in LA and missed each other in the lobby by a couple of minutes. Our manager was like, "You know who just walked through here? Jimmy Page. So close, but not quite." Oh man, that must be such a life goal for this guy to meet Page. I mean, obviously he plays like him, his band plays like Led Zepp, so it must be a true dream for him to meet Page. I'm sure it's going to happen one day. You know, that's very similar to a personal story I had. You know, my best band in the world is Pearl Jam, and I love that band from the get-go. As soon as I heard Alive, fell in love with them, and I've been following and been a huge fan since. I'm actually part of the 10 Club, their fan club that they have from the get-go. So needless to say, Mike McCready, one of their guitar players, a huge, huge influence on my playing. Long story short, last October, I actually met him. I met him, and I'm 48 years old, and I felt like a little kid meeting the guy. I was genuinely happy. You know, meeting your idol, right? You're very, very nervous, and you don't know. He could treat you like a complete asshole, but he didn't. He was so nice. I got to see him rock out 3 feet in front of me. He gave me some pics. It was such a beautiful night and really a highlight of my life. So I can only imagine this guy, you know, meeting Page at some point and feeling that same thing, if not more. Okay, last question. Do you feel like you've distanced yourself from the Zeppelin comparisons with this latest album? I think if you take a common denominator control group and you ask them, what is rock and roll to you, then Zeppelin and those groups that laid the foundation are the baseline. So our early approach was, we're playing rock and roll music. It's what we grew up with. It's what we listen to. It's driven deeply in our DNA. And initially, yeah, the reaction was like, this sounds a bit like Led Zeppelin. A bit. It sounds exactly like Led Zeppelin, especially with the singer. You get that reference a lot, they say. I'm sure every rock and roll band gets that reference a lot. Not really, man. You know what I mean? You get it the most, I can tell you, Greta Van Fleet. You get it the most, especially with that damn singer of yours. But when time goes on, you get a bit older, there's an evolution in what you're doing, and with Starcatcher, it definitely sounds like Greta Van Fleet, no doubt about that. Yeah, I'll give him that, but again, that dude's voice, it's inescapable how he sounds like Robert Plant, so I don't know if they can ever get away from that comparison. It's not like they're playing industrial or electronic music and the guy's singing like Plant, you know what I mean? That'll be something else, but you know, to play in a rock band, to have a singer like that, it's inescapable. Greta Van Fleet, I think that's just something you're going to have to accept and live with it and embrace it and just move forward with your own sound, your own rockin' songs, and that'll be that. And whoever wants to follow you and jump on a bandwagon will. And those don't, you know what? Fuck them. Thank you, Greta Van Fleet, for showing the younger generations how to rock out, even if you kind of sound like Led Zeppelin. Thank you so much for listening. Smash that like button and subscribe if I brought you value to this. Looking forward to bringing some more articles and commenting on it. Looking forward to seeing your comments. Let me know, what do you think? Do you like this band? Do you hate this band? They're still, I think, in my opinion, very polarizing. Let me know your thoughts, and I'll see you in the next one.
Thanks a bunch to Aaron Ming for providing the amazing artwork for this video. Hope you enjoyed it. Please connect with PJ Pat on Instagram at @RockWithPJPat or on Facebook at the It's One Louder page. Purchase some merch at itsonelouder.com if you'd like to support the channel. All is appreciated.